Dear Sugar is supported by
The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. Sugar is here, the both of us, speaking straight into your ears. I'm Cheryl Strayed.
I'm Steve Almond. This is Dear Sugar Radio.
Oh, dear soul, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me? Check my mailbox every day for any sugar you send my way.
Dear Sugar, I am a writer struggling to accept my first bad reviews and then somehow let them go. It's a privilege problem. My first book is making its way in the world, and that is a gift I'm grateful for. But it is a piece of work so close to my heart, so deeply personal, that every time I receive a negative review, I feel it like a punch in the gut. I begin to think that my book is not only mediocre, it is bad, a worthless bunch of words that was never good enough to publish. This process is only just beginning, and if I'm lucky, I'll write more books and will get more bad reviews. But I have to ask, is there a way through these devastating feelings? Is there some shortcut, some magical technique to make it hurt less? How do you guys do it? How do you manage these responses to your work and not let them diminish you? Yours, thin-skinned writer. Yeah.
I so sympathize with this writer's feelings. I know exactly how this feels. It really is so universal, this experience of having to deal with negative criticism when you put something out in the world.
That's right. You put it out in the world, and then it belongs to the world. And thin-skinned writer, it's a really tough arrangement, but as you seem to be aware of, it's better to be in a position where people are reacting to your work. You made all those decisions. You sat down at the keyboard alone. You concentrated really hard. You tried to pay attention and tell the truth, and you made the best decisions you could. And then you edited them and had help with an editor trying to make them even better decisions. And then they moved out into the world. That mm-hmm. is the natural and ideal course of things. You worked hard and you saw that reward. And you should esteem yourself for that. But it's also a part of the process that then the world gets to react to it.
And I just want to say, thin-skinned talks about this book being deeply personal. I take that to be it's a memoir or a collection of essays where the writer is actually writing about him or herself. Right. And I will say, I deeply relate to that. I was terrified before Torch, my first book, was published. But at least it was a novel.
Right.
And so if somebody didn't like the characters in the book, they weren't saying they didn't like me and my family.
Right.
They were saying they didn't like these characters I constructed on the page.
Right.
Wild was my second book.
That's
it's
right.
a memoir. And I, before it was published, I have never been so emotionally unhinged in my whole life. I couldn't sleep. It was the first time ever that I went to the doctor and said, will you give me some medicine so I can sleep?
Mm-hmm.
I would wake up in terror in the middle of the night thinking, what are people going to say about me? Because when you write about a memoir or when you respond to a memoir, people don't say, I didn't like that character. I thought she was doing this or that. They say, I don't like her.
Yep.
People who hate my book believe that they hate me. People who love my book believe that they love me. Strangers walk up to me and say, are you Cheryl Strayed? And when I say yes, they say, I love you.
I do not have that experience as frequently.
But it's an interesting experience because it is so personal. Then the criticism also feels personal. When people are writing about not just your book, but your life, they're defining you in terms that you wouldn't use to define yourself.
Yeah.
That is a very, very difficult experience. And no writer would tell you otherwise.
Yeah. You know what we should do? Actually, what we must do is talk to your mentor and my hero, George Saunders, because he's a writer who has thought a lot about, written beautiful books, mm-hmm. and also thought a lot about, I think, both criticism and its role, but also the writer's role in reacting to that criticism and trying to keep ourselves focused on the larger mission, the deeper mission. So let's call George.
Let's call George.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Steve. Hi, Cheryl. Steve,
it's
me?
Our favorite
George,
person.
George, can you hear us?
Yeah. I'm going to put my headphones in a second.
Okay.
Hey, is this better?
Yes, okay, that's perfect.
Hi, that's better.
Okay.
So here we have this letter, George, from this young writer, this thin-skinned, or he feels he's thin-skinned writer. And, you know, Cheryl and I immediately thought of you as somebody who might be able to provide some counsel and comfort to this guy.
As a fellow thin-skinned person.
And I'll just tell you, both Steve and I have plenty to talk about in this department, too, because I think one thing that all three of us share, not only are we all published authors, we've all been roundly condemned by people in public places.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I would say I've been the most roundly condemned, but that's all right. We don't have to compete.
I mean, I think that's the experience of being a writer. Right.
Yeah. Yep. You know, obviously, when I read the letter, my heart went out to the person because I remembered when I sold my first book, I placed one of the stories, a novella, in Harper's, and they ran it in this big folio, and it was such a, you know, a big deal and all that. And then in the next issue of Harper's came out, and they published two just scathing letters about my piece, and they both felt like they'd been written by my subconscious, you know, or so, you know, like right on the thing I was most doubtful about. And it just sucked. It hurt, you know, it really hurt. And what I did was I went down and I cleaned the basement for 3 days.
Aww.
And there was something about the being alone and being able to kind of work through it mentally that really helped. But it's just, that's really the painful thing, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Because as thin-skinned writer says, you know, so often, you know, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, that piece that you've created is not only something you've worked incredibly hard on, but in some cases, as this letter writer says, it's deeply personal and close to his or her heart.
And you gave it in a spirit of, you know, I mean, you were enthusiastic about it when you did it, and you were maybe a little bit, you know, kind of carried away and uplifted. And then when it goes out into the world and somebody turns around and doesn't like it, that's just a tough thing.
My question is, though, George, the fact that these letters identified things that you were at least partly sort of bracing yourself against or cognizant might be the basis of criticism of these stories, did that provide you any sense that at least these letter writers had tried to deeply engage with what you were up to rather than being
dismissive? Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that happened during that three-day hiatus in the basement was that you know, the kind of shame and all that kind of stuff, it kind of died away a little bit. So when I was down there, I thought, you know, the first few days were just, you know, self-recrimination. And then the third day I thought, well, somebody, you know, was stung by this enough to hate it.
Yes.
That must be something, you know, they didn't just ignore it. And then, you know, in the middle of day three, I could think, well, and also Harper's purposely ran these because they thought there was kind of there's something energetic about it, you know. There's like three levels. One level is you review it everywhere and they're all glowing. Everybody likes that.
That's my favorite part. That's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
I still dream about
everywhere
that one.
And you're hated. Nobody likes that.
No.
But the third one is nobody reviews you. And I think really, you know, if you're generating energy, that's really, and I think this is even more clear to me as I get older. The one thing you don't want to be is ignored, you know, or kind of just blah. And then the other thing, I did a trip one time for GQ, and I went with Clinton over to Africa, and we, you know, toured his foundation stuff. And I got to interview him, and I asked him about kind of a similar question, like, how do you cope with the intense criticism that you sometimes get, and even the, you know, the anger and all that kind of thing, and still function? And he told me something, and I'll paraphrase this probably badly, but he said he got advice from Hillary on this, which was basically that, of course it hurts, and of course your tendency is to kind of curl up in a ball and deflect it, you know, to like shoot the messenger or be going to a defensive posture. But she said the more powerful thing to do is to kind of open yourself up. And I kind of imagine like Saint Sebastian, you know, like, okay, hit me with whatever you got. Don't close yourself up at all. Let it hit you and hurt you. And then what will happen over time is most of it just falls away. You know, a lot of it, you just forget it. It didn't really sting. And there might be two or three things that really did get you that then, you know, given enough time, you could convert into some kind of benefit for yourself. So I remember one time and I don't remember who wrote the review or even what book of mine it was about, but it was a real negative thing. It really was kind of difficult to take. But in the middle of that, the writer said something like, Saunders writes better out of love than out of anger.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
And of course, at the time, oh, that's so stupid. But that has stuck with me all these years, and it saved me a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Like, there, a lot of times I'd be about to start a piece in kind of an angry, you know, vituperative spirit, and I'd remember that and think, oh, yeah, that's right. He was right about that. So I don't even remember who it was, but it was a gem, you know, if I just,
right.
But you had to wait a really long time for it to start feeling that way.
Yeah, I think it's important to think about that. I mean, obviously, there are different kinds of critics. There are, you know, the internet trolls, the people who
right.
just want to say nasty things about you or about your work. And oftentimes, those people, I've found certainly in my case with Wild, people who haven't even read the book.
Right.
You know, they weigh in on it because... they're aware of it and they're
angry. They've seen the movie poster.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, so those people, first of all, I should just say to thin-skinned writer, you know, I think that it always hurts when people say mean things about you, whether you're a writer or an accountant or a doctor or a teacher. When we face criticism, it hurts. And we need to figure out, you know, how much to listen to that criticism. You know, I try to ignore those hateful trolls. But I think what George speaks of, where sometimes our critics can actually be telling us something that might be useful to us. And one thing I always remember as a writer is I have never asserted that anything I've published or written was perfect. You know, I always say, here's this book, and I did the best I could, and I know it is flawed. And
right.
so when somebody then comes along and points out some of those flaws,
right.
it's a helpful reminder to me to say, yeah, I knew it was flawed, actually. And, you know, thank
right.
you for taking the time to think about it.
Yeah.
You know, Steve, you asked a question about what a critic's role is. And I think one of the things that maybe has degraded in recent years is that, you know, criticism is a rhetorical science, and it's got to be rigorous, and it's a work
yes.
of art in itself. So the person who's criticizing the book has first a job of kind of laying out their aesthetic position, placing the book in a certain tradition.
Yes.
And then if they're a good critic, they can say very precisely where the writer went wrong. But a lot of this new criticism, or kind of, I would say, internet-flavored criticism, is just thumbs up, thumbs down. So one thing I try to do when I'm reading reviews is just say, well, how rhetorically sound is this argument?
That's right.
And, of course, the ones that are rhetorically sound are the ones that will help you the most, because the person is on the same journey as you. They're acknowledging the flaws. You know, they're acknowledging that every work of art is flawed from the outset, and your artistry has to do with sort of making the flaw a beauty. So a good critic will be, you know, along with you on that, will say, yeah, this is the risk of this kind of work, and then might say, she flinched at this point, or mm-hmm. she triumphed at this point. But that
right.
that's always going to be helpful because it's grounded in some actual technical rigor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the thing that thin-skinned writer can reasonably at least wish for is that somebody really deeply engages with their work. That's all you can ask of the critic. You can't ask the critic to like the work.
Right. You know, of course, it's so facile to say, just be open and take it, you know, but often if a criticism lands on you and sort of stays with you, there's something within you that already knew that thing, you know, that kind of,
right.
the feeling is like, yeah, that's right, you know.
That's what sends you down to the basement for 3 days.
Yeah.
So, George, one thing that I've definitely noticed, and maybe this will be comfort to thin-skinned writer, is, you know, the day you read that terrible review or somebody has, you know, written something horrible about you on a blog or something, you know, I always feel like, you know, I've just like punched in the heart. I mean, it really is, it's almost physically painful. And it sent you to your basement for 3 days and so forth. And, you know, I think Steve can also relate to this feeling. I mean, it hurts, right?
I live in that feeling.
But then what I found to be true is then it gets better. And it's almost like, you know, having a bad breakup. You think you can't survive. And then 10
right.
years later, you're like, oh, I'm so glad that relationship ended. You know, I mean, what I mean to say is the sometimes this criticism can become funny. My friend, the writer Karen Carbo, has this great story about how one of her Amazon reviews, one of the titles on one of the Amazon reviews of one of her books is Karen Carbo has written the worst book ever written in the history of books, which, you know, which I think was great because we all know that that's hard to do. I mean, there are a lot of bad books out there, right? And
right.
to think that she wrote the worst one, you know, and so we laugh about this. I mean, she laughs about this. It's downright funny. And there are so many things, you know, that people have said about me or my work that I can honestly make light of now. And in fact, Steve Almond has written a whole book
yes, I have.
About this called Letters from People Who Hate Me.
Yeah.
And so turning that around, and I'm curious about your Has it become funny to you over time, George?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think what the goal in what you just said is that, you know, time, I mean, when you're in the depths of that terrible feeling or any terrible feeling, if you can just hang on to the idea that it won't be as bad in a week, you know,
right.
2 weeks will be a little less bad. And, you know, when I was in the basement, and I remember thinking, okay, this really hurts right now. It also, you know, sort of as in the letter, it made me think this is just the first of many bad reviews that were coming, which is a terrible feeling. Because part of what you're dealing with, I think, is if you're at all inclined to self-shaming, which I think so many people are,
writers,
you know,
in particular,
you kind of just want some way to dig yourself out of the rubble and be yourself again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
just some little way. And it's funny how what a small idea can get you out of that rut. You know, the idea that it'll pass in time, and then maybe in that review, if our thin-skin writer can find one thing in there that seems hopeful or seems kind of like to be upholding something that she or he was trying to do. At least I sort of rattle somebody's cage with this story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That might be enough to get you through the 3 weeks, and suddenly it will seem funny. It'll seem like a war story, you know, at some
yeah.
point.
That's right. That's right. And I love the idea also that, hey, your job, you're an artist. Part of your job is
yeah.
to be disruptive. Don't get all surprised when people are disrupted and they express that to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people should be agitated. We're in the business of unbearable feelings and implicating
yeah.
the reader. And if one of those readers happens to be a critic, they're going to tell you about it. A good, or at least a well-intentioned review always has something to teach you, even if it's that you really are disruptive in this particular way, or you're most effective when you're disruptive out of love rather than contempt or whatever it is.
And, you know, the other thing, and I find myself getting a little bit, I don't know, impatient or something with the MFA culture that we've made, and that, you know, sometimes a bad review is correct. A
right.
bad review is important, insightful work, and saying to somebody, you are not doing useful work here, you know. And so I noticed, you know, in the wider culture, this kind of feels to me like a vague sense that everyone should be an artist and can be an artist and must be an artist or not worth anything. And that's not true. You know, it's not true that everybody can write a great book. So to a certain extent, you would also say a critic is performing a vital function by patrolling the perimeter a little bit and saying, you know, just because you typed it doesn't mean it's a book. But so, you know, somewhere in there, when you get a bad review, I think you have to also, as I said earlier, say, well, maybe they're right. You know, if we're going to continue to value art, we have to also say that it's not necessarily a 100% hit rate kind of thing. You know, not everybody is a great writer. Not every book is a great book. And that's part of the very dangerous thing that we enter into, you know.
And a lot of great writers have written less than great books, you know.
Right, so, necessarily.
I mean, and that's part of a career. I mean, I frankly, I think we all probably have one of those books in us, you know.
Interestingly, I have several.
Maybe.
But, yeah, I'm working on one right now.
Right, right. But you know, it's interesting. It's like, it's so true, and we lose sight of that. Like, look, hey, it's hard to be a writer. It's hard to write a book. But it's also like you worked really hard at something and you put it out in the world and now it belongs to the world.
It does.
And even if it's, you know, you could write a great book that has one lousy story or a passage that feels mawkish and artificial. You made those decisions. You decided to put it out in the world. You have to stand by those decisions. If a good critic picks up on the fact that you've been evasive or fraudulent or histrionic or false in a particular moment, you know, I don't think a writer can argue with that. You made those decisions because you were the person who put it into the world.
Yeah.
George, obviously you were and are such an important mentor to me in so many ways. I learned so much from your beautiful writing, your great teaching, but also your counsel in this particular area. And, you know, all of this stuff we've been talking about, you told me all of that. But we also talked about the flip side of that, that, you know, you listen to your critics and you try to take what you can from them, what you can learn from that.
Right.
And you also let them go. You also say, okay, I'm going to do my work. Do you remember telling me that, George, that giving me that kind of advice?
Yeah, because otherwise, you know, if you don't have that attitude, you end up just being a kind of a pleaser. You
right.
know, you're going to do just exactly what will keep you out of trouble. And who wants that? But as you say, at the end of the day, I think you have to say, you know, I'm doing this for personal reasons. I'm trying to reach the light. To get there, I might have to, I might be a little visionary. I might be a little bigger than somebody can understand at a time. But my goal is to be my best self.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to evaluate everything in terms of whether it'll help me with the next book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the main pain of a bad review for me is that it might make you sort of non-viable. And, you know, if your reviews are crushing enough and they either stop you from writing or stop people from publishing you. So that, I found that's one way to get out from under them, you know. Like if you get a bad review, is it going to stop you from writing the next book? If not, then you got to kind of shrug it off and keep going. You know, we're supposed to be playful. This is not like no one, when you write a bad book, nobody dies usually, you know, nobody. So I think, you know, for me, the most important thing, and the thing I would say to the letter writer is just don't let them get your sense of play, because that's the reason you started doing this, to be playful and to give pleasure. And when it starts locking up and getting serious and starts feeling like you're implicated as a human being, then there's something, you know, to be worked with in your understanding of who it is that's criticizing you, you know. For me, anyway, you know, the neurotic perfectionist in me, when a bad review comes in, the tendency is to go, I knew it, I'm terrible. So I think the great ones are the ones who just, you know, like Dickens, they just crank them out, and they're going to reinvigorate their sense of play every time, not for any reason other than they like to play.
Yeah.
And they're going to recognize anything that shuts them down and makes them pain-racked as the enemy. I think that's, for me, that's really important to remember. This is not killing anybody.
Yeah, it's a variation of, I think it's a John Cale line, that the idea that self-consciousness is the death of art. And when a critic comes along and gets in your head, they're basically making you self-conscious. Mm-hmm. And that's the most crippling side effect, is that this guy, thin-skinned writer, is sitting there saying exactly what George just said. I knew it. It's terrible. It is bad. A worthless bunch of words that was never good enough to publish. And in fact, that self-consciousness acts upon his artistic creative impulse like hydrochloric acid acts on your skin. It just absolutely eats away at it. We need to be loose enough and improvisatory enough to be able to, you know, imagine what we're going to imagine without sitting there saying, well, now what is that hovering critic in my mind or out there on the internet going to say about this?
Right. Just don't let them get your sense of play.
Oh, George, thank you so much.
It's just a pleasure to see your mind at work on the page and just talking with us. And, you know, I think I speak for Cheryl and almost all of our listeners in saying whatever crappy book you're working on, we're all eager to read it. Exactly.
I'll fix it before I send it out.
Awesome.
Okay, George.
All right, thank you guys.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
So George has signed off, so we can both admit that we have like these huge soul boners for like George Saunders.
I love George. He really is. I love him.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's one of those guys, who they're rare, where they move through the world and there's just such a thoughtfulness and humility and good intention to him. He seems one of the rare people who's fully aware of how hard it is and beautiful it is to be alive. That's they don't come along.
He's often the real deal. And what a great conversation that I hope Thin-Skinned Writer was helpful to you. I think what we all said really in chorus is that it hurts to be criticized. It hurts to have, you know, that personal heartfelt work that you labored over for years be rejected or mocked or, you know, whatever it is. You know, but it's also just part of the work of being a writer. And I would say this spills over into other professions as well. I mean, I don't know what job there is that you're not going to face some criticism at some time.
Right.
For me, the experience has been, it's spilled over into not just, you know, not, it's not contained in my writing life, but it's in my whole life. You know, how do I contend with not being loved? You know, I would say that more than anything in the world, what I hoped that my writing would bring me was love. If I'm going to be as honest as I can be and as vulnerable as I can be when I think and talk about my writing life, like I want people to not just love my work, I kind of want them to love me. And so when I've had to have the experience where it's like right there, you know, it's on my computer screen or sometimes in print, that I am not loved.
You're actually reviled, right?
Yeah, and that, thank you for putting such a fine point on that, too.
Well, it gets vicious.
No, and I also don't want to overstate it. I've also read many times that I have been loved, and both things, you know, I think initially messed with my head. Like, I actually have had to kind of do personal work on myself to deal with being loved and being not loved, and to say, well, what does this mean for me as a human? And part of my evolution has been, which is saying, you know, everyone doesn't have to love you. You know, everyone doesn't have to love you. You don't need anyone's permission to do the work that you're here to do.
And it's important to remember, thin-skinned writer, that basically, I don't think there is a writer who is not thin-skinned. So you can just be, we'll just refer to you as a writer. But, you know, there's no shortcut. You know, there's no magical technique. But I think your job, actually, thin-skinned writer, is to see what you can learn. The trick in all this, always, is to try, if you can, to take what's of use and leave the rest behind.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the doubt, leave the, I can't do this behind. That's irrational, crazy thinking.
Yeah, you just have to keep writing. And, you know, if none of this rings true to you, at least as you write, you can remember and rest assured that you can't possibly write the worst book that's ever been written.
That's right.
Because Karen Carbo
has already written that
book.
That's according
to that Amazon reviewer. So,
nor can you get as much hate mail as you'll never get as much hate
Steve
mail
Steve
Allman as I
has
have.
The prize there. So good luck.
We wish you good luck and
keep
good writing.
Keep writing.
Right.
Keep rotten.
It only takes one bird under the saddle and you and I, babe. Oh, we do battle.
Dear Sugar Radio is produced by WBUR in Boston.
We are produced and edited by Lisa Tobin.
Engineering and production help by Jim Brumberg.
We are here at Digital One in Portland, Oregon. This does not happen unless you listen and subscribe, but also write us letters.
You can subscribe on iTunes.
And can send letters to DearSugarRadio@gmail.com.
And you can also go on the WBUR website to look at the show notes.
Yes.
That is a rich wealth of information about all the books and essays and songs and people we reference in the course of our conversations on each show.
Yeah.
They're always there on the WBUR website at the bottom of whatever show you're listening to. But I just have one question for you.
Yes.
Are you Steve Almond?
Oh my God. Are you going to tell me that you love me?
I love you.
Oh. I can't believe it would be better.